Hi, this is Paul Siegel, and you're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show. Hi everyone, welcome to the Wandering DMs livestream. I'm Paul, and today we'll be discussing HelgaCon, a small convention that Dan and I attended back in April. I'm recording this introduction after the fact because the internet connection at the convention wasn't the best, and for some reason that resulted in us losing the first 20 seconds or so of the stream. So I just wanted to welcome you all to the stream, and now I will turn to Paul of the past to tell us more about the convention.
It's called HelgaCon. I've been running it for a long time, 12 years now. We rent a house out on the Cape. You can get those vacation homes pretty cheap during the off-season. We spend a weekend locked in a house gaming all weekend.
Awesome. I have not been out of the house since I got here Friday afternoon.
And it's beautiful out.
Yeah, it is.
Spring has come and we are inside gaming.
Which is great. So, and Paul, you set this up every year, and we all put this together because it's among the highlights of most of our years, actually.
Oh, thanks, man.
So thanks for doing that.
Yeah.
So this year,
I like to tell everyone it's a completely selfish act. I'm happy you enjoy it, but I'm doing it for myself.
So we had extra gaming. So you've been here for 4 days.
Yeah. This is the first year we experimented with the fourth day. I called it "quote unquote" premium day because I had to charge people a little extra to cover the cost of the rental. So we had an extra day where we took it a little easier, didn't pack quite as many games in, but still did some gaming. It's a smaller group. We had maybe like 10 people over premium day. And then by Friday, the rest of the group arrived, and we had 24 total attendees this year.
Great.
Actually, now I say that out loud, it's 22 because unfortunately, two sicknesses lost us a couple players.
Right. If it weren't for that, so we filled the house, so all the beds are taken, stuff like that.
Yeah, it's a big old house. It's ridiculous. Lots of beds, but we usually have like 3 games running at a time at any given time. I think there were 17 total games in the main convention, and then 4 on premium day. Yeah, that's
about right. And sometimes you have 4 going at the same time.
And that's true.
Right?
That's
right. 3 or 4 going per time slot.
Yeah. So what did you play? What stands out?
Okay, so as many people, so I'm running things most of the time. So while I'm here, there's 5 time slots, and I put in 4 games for me to run. And so shortly after I did that, I realized, I can't play almost anything, and there's so many great games running. But I actually did run 4 games out of 5 time slots, so I was running games pretty much constantly the whole time. So I ran 2 sessions of the second classic AD&D Slavers module.
Nice.
And those things are split up into halves, so I ran 2 separate sessions of that. I've never run the famous Slaver modules before, so I'm kind of running that as an experiment to find out how that runs.
I had run those, or I had run A1 at a couple different conventions.
Right.
I read A2 prepared to run at a convention, never ran it myself. How do you think they compared?
Yeah, I do think so. So Paul and I kind of have an ongoing, like, are they good question.
Yeah.
And they are wonky in some ways. Mm-hmm. And I do think that A1 maybe has a stronger theme to it. And the A2 module is kind of weird in places. And so you're kind of having, and the players are like, how does that make sense? And frankly, a lot of times I like the slavers are cunning and weird, and they have completely fanatical, non-morale rolling opponents, and the slaver lords might actually just be mentally ill with the things that you run into. So it can be a little wonky, and I almost for granted how incredibly famous they are.
Yeah.
Now I am running the tournament version of it. I'm running the tournament version of it, and maybe if you expand it and use all the campaign stuff, maybe it becomes a little bit less weird.
I feel like that would be an interesting thing to do. I would love someday to run the slaver modules end to end out as a group campaign play. Try to do the whole thing. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
I do feel though, like as written, that they're kind of bookended with greatness, right? Like the A1 I think is really good, and A4 is just phenomenal, and A2 and A3 are weird, a little difficult.
I hear that. And can I spoil A4 just briefly?
Sure.
I mean A4, in case anybody.
Spoilers.
So A4 is the famous. You start off as prisoners in a dungeon with nothing and basically naked, and can you fight your way? So that's at the time, at least, that was a novel, unique concept, and it's stuck in a lot of people's minds.
I'd say still probably one of the better implementations of that conceit.
Great. Yes. Great. Yeah. Lovely. So I am doing that and kind of discovering whether it's good or not. And I, you know, I'm learning, you know, it actually might not be completely the silver bullet for my personal preference playstyle. It's, you know, again, with the tournament thing, trying to put all the words there to get all the referees on the same page in the tournament, it turns into this giant wall of text. And honestly, it's hard for me to interpret it at the table. So I do like a somewhat more minimalist thing now.
How do you feel about, how do you feel compares to the G modules, which I know you run those a lot at conventions?
Yeah, less well. I prefer the G modules much, much better. In fact, the whole time I'm doing this, I'm thinking about the very first Hill Giant module, where most of the areas are about 3 or 4 lines long, maybe 3 sentences. And I can immediately parse that. And to my taste, the A-series is much more baroque.
Yeah.
And much harder to, which much weirder and harder to parse.
Yeah, I think my favorite thing of the A-series is that there are certain key encounters that are just brilliant, and they need that much text because there's so much detail of all the things that are happening in the room and all the tactics the enemy's using, etc. That said, if I'm just like, I need to fill a 4-hour slot with a D&D classic kind of feeling dungeon crawl sort of thing, I actually more often will turn to the winners of the one-page dungeon contest. That, I think, really fits my desires of what I want at the table in front of me when I'm running the game.
I see. Yeah, I'm totally moving in that direction more all the time. There are times when I want, and not that this video is supposed to be all about the A-series, but like I would like to know how long they spent writing it, because clearly they have a template where there's 9 major encounters specifically. There's 5 monsters. There's 4 traps, and you must make 1 new monster per section. And I'm wondering. So granted that, like, did they take like 2 days to write it, and now we've been analyzing it for 35 years after that? And so you're right. Some of the traps have that spark of inspiration, and some of them are like, I had to fill out one of my slots.
Yeah.
So
funny.
Yeah. So in addition, so I'm running that, and I also ran Lost Tomb of Rehotep.
Yep.
The Alan Lucian's precursor to Tomb of Horrors. Like that a lot. I think I ran it much, much, much better than when I ran Tomb of Horrors a couple years ago.
Great.
And then just today we wrapped up a session of Outdoor Spoliation, where I take the outdoor survival map, and the players are high level and are either freebooting or now have settled down and have their own castle trying to run. And there was a lot of debate about how to run the administrative part of the kingdom that lasted well over an hour and a half and 2 hours.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that I got to do better. Now, it's kind of a unique thing, honestly, I realize. So now I'm running this ongoing, once-a-year, convention-based kingdom running campaign. I don't know anybody that does that.
Yeah, that's pretty.
And so basically my takeaway today is I think I need to offload the Run the Kingdom part to like online survey before we get to the convention.
Interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting idea. Sort of a precursor.
Yeah.
Some inputs that will then help you build what the actual play is.
And also like pick, because I have a whole bunch of like quest threads. Mm-hmm. I ought to put that up to like what's your preferred quest thread and then hit the table and be like, now you're organizing and doing that.
Yeah, that's actually a really good idea. Yeah, I definitely feel like we've been pointed in that direction. I didn't get to play that game this year.
Yeah.
Just because one of my own games that I was running was at the same time. Yeah. I feel like in the past years we've been inching in that direction.
And I'm learning, and I felt embarrassed that it didn't work super, super well today.
Yeah.
It was a little shaky today. But we're learning, and I think I got to definitely iterate on that.
Well, let's go back to Rahotep, because that was super fun.
Great.
I got to play in that.
Great.
And the funny thing there was, I think originally I was thinking of running it here.
Right.
And then I went, oh, I have all these other games, I got to cut something. I'm going to cut Rahotep. And I said that, I think to you we had an email exchange or something. And you were like, well, how about I run it? And I was like, great. And then without thinking about it, when we were organizing, sort of picking what games we were interested in playing, I put that on my list, and the randomizer ended me in your game.
Right.
And then only like days before, I thought, oh, wait a minute. I know that module super well. Maybe I shouldn't be playing in it. And so we had a nice email exchange there where I said, hey, Dan, is it okay if I play this thing? I'll play an idiot or what, hide in the back or what, or generally not try to tell people about stuff. And Dan replied with,
And you know, we've been talking about the adversary position when I ran the dragon while you were DM at TotalCon a month ago. And I said, well, it kind of occurred, you know, I was surprised to see your name in the game, and it occurred to me, like, maybe you should be a planet, and you should be, like, perhaps a reborn avatar soul of the lost Lich-Rohotep, who is, like, not entirely sure why, but is driven to get into this place, ultimately to return the soul and revive Rohotep. Would you have any interest in that possibly at all?
Yep, and I was all for it.
And then and then flip me at the end and then take over the actual lich and try to destroy the players that had gotten through. And it worked marvelously well. I had to trust, you know, I wouldn't trust many other people other than Paul to, you know, reasonably keep the information from not benefiting the game.
Yeah.
Wonderful job. Flip sides. And the main thing, actually, maybe even more than the taking the tactics, was thinking about the voice that he'd come in through Hotep, because some of our players had been taunting monsters up to there. It's like Rohotep is a terrible leader, and he's a goofball, he's a jobber. I'm gonna destroy him. I'm gonna step on his face. I'm gonna take his crown. He's nothing. You know, like in order to aggro some monsters on them. And then Paul steps in and
my favorite part of that was the person, especially the player who was really pushing that, at some point turned to one of the players and said, gosh, I sure hope he can't hear, like, that Rohotep can't hear me saying this. And I just kind of smiled lightly to myself, thinking, like, I hear everything. So when we got to that moment and I revealed myself as the Lich, I immediately pointed at that player and I said, your death will be the most painful and slow of all of them. I've heard everything.
And I wasn't, and that's the thing, and I wasn't tracking, right? I've got a bunch of players at the table. I wasn't tracking those kinds of side comments. I wasn't aware of almost any of those things. I had probably forgotten about all the taunting that had happened at that point. And so that was just really delightfully for you to step in and then
fun.
Actually did. And you know what? I'll just name her. It's our friend Lauren, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So our friend Lauren was like trying to track multiple stone golems to attack her, and you said that, and you actually did destroy her, so good for you.
Oh, it wasn't the painful death I was hoping for. I realized I was going down, so I finally managed to hit her with a disintegrate spell.
Yes.
But at least I killed her.
I appreciate that. And you also sucked someone into the Sphere of Annihilation.
That was good, too. I also appreciate that. Although, very interesting point that someone made later, I think it was Max, said, well, you know, I was talking about, it's unfortunate that the, like, control of the sphere didn't come up, because I think that's one of the most interesting things of that presentation of the
Good
sphere.
Yeah.
And he said, well, how would anyone know that they could even try to do that? And I was like, they wouldn't.
That's a really good point. I mean, that's why we run it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd never run that before. I'd never run ever a session with a Sphere of Annihilation.
Yep.
So among the things was, let's see an opportunity to actually use that. You know what? I'd increased the speed. Even what was happening I had increased it. It was supposed to be slower than that.
Wow.
Yeah. And so one of the weird things, it's got a weirdly slow speed, and then Lucian's put it in this giant chamber with so much space to move beyond.
I could see it moving at a slower speed if it wasn't in such a big room, but it
was
a huge room.
Exactly. So even that was double speed, and it felt like it was inching along. So that's why we run it, and maybe if we did it again sometime, we'd do maybe something else.
So what was your biggest highlight of all that? What do you think is the story you're gonna walk away telling folks? Is it the Rohotep thing, or that's mine?
That was my favorite. You know, it's weird because, you know, it's also the oldest school thing that I was running.
Yeah.
It's minimalistic. It's only, you know, 4 digest pages. You know, I did this little edit job on it, and I feel like it's the one that I own the most this time. I feel like I owned it the most.
Cool.
I was the most free with it.
Yeah.
So I think it was well paced. I actually did go over by an hour in the dedicated time. It's very embarrassing and awkward and not good for other players. So I apologize for that. And particularly, but granted how cruddy a job I did running 2 Maharas a couple of years ago, I'm happy that I got much better at running that kind of thing.
I remember there was one point where you, like, walled off a section of the tomb without really explaining it. Just boom, there's a wall there. And the players befuddled, looked at it for a moment or two, and then said, well, we have this other avenue, let's go that way.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really nice force there, because, we could have gone that way, but we all, you and I both knew that wasn't going to be nearly as fun.
Right, exactly.
So.
I did want to see the climactic thing, and I did want to run a Lich with a Sphere of Annihilation once. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. So I'll just call out to our friend John. So we have a friend John who is in all four of my games, and I killed him in all four of my games this weekend. Right, three out of four times in the final battle. So he fought through for 4 hours, got to the final battle, and usually I dropped him in the first round or two of the climactic battle. And our friend John sits there for like 30 minutes watching the other. So I did kill John four out of four times.
That's great.
So thank you for hanging in there, John, about that. So you, Paul, ran how many things this weekend?
I ran four games over the course of the weekend.
Great.
I ran a premium day game. I ran Lamentations of the Flame Princess module, Death Frost Doom, but using the Stay Frosty rules, which is a military sci-fi game meant to evoke movies like Aliens or Predator.
Okay.
So it's a twist of horror, but Marines, sort of sci-fi Marines trying to survive, and very likely not.
Okay.
That was a lot of fun. I really liked the Stay Frosty system. Really enjoyed that. It was a challenge to me. Sci-fi is not my usual thing.
Yeah.
And basically, I'm sitting there with a module in front of me that's written in a fantasy voice, and I had to, and I'm interpreting on the fly.
Yeah.
Okay, this is not a library. This is a bank of computer panels and a big giant stack of hard drives. And, so that was interesting.
Players afterwards were talking about it, loved it.
That was
still like in working with their characters actually hours later.
That's fun. I think honestly the best thing I added to that, which isn't even in the Stay Frosty rules, and I would recommend they add it, is when the players were, I had them roll up their characters because it's very easy, very fast to do in that game.
Oh, really?
In fact, to the point of like, I fully expect them to not all survive, so I had a big pile of character sheets. So I said, when I kill you, you can roll up a new character and bring you in. And I kind of abstracted. I said, there's a whole squad of you. Don't worry about it. There's maybe 12 more guys behind you. Don't worry about them.
Okay.
But they might step up to the front when someone dies.
Okay.
One of the things I did is I said, when you're naming yourself, you don't get a name. You get a serial number.
Right.
It's your initials dash three numbers that are meaningful to you so you can remember it easily. That's your serial number. That's annoying to the other players. So they'll probably give you nicknames. And the only rule for nicknames is you can't make up your own. And everyone does. Everyone immediately dives into that, and they give each other ridiculous nicknames, and it's wonderful. It's a wonderful bit of character creation that everyone else names your character.
That's brilliant.
So that was super fun. So,
how long have you done? Like, when did you come up with that?
The notion of having the names and serial numbers. I don't know. The
nicknames that have to come from other people.
Oh, I don't know. A couple of weeks ago, I think. Okay. I ran this game once a week ago just as a practice run.
Okay.
And I know that I was thinking about that idea prior to that. So maybe 2 weeks
ago. See, sometimes I'm wondering, like, how many of our ideas come up, like, in a pre-planning stage and how many came up at the table?
Oh, I can give you a great example of that. Yeah. So I ran Bryson Springs again this weekend, which is my 1930s era Cthulhu game. And there's one character in there who's this... Who's a crook, right? And their whole goal, their major character goal is to escape, right? And so unlike the other characters who maybe want to investigate more, this character has the potential for the player to decide, well, I'm just going to leave, right?
Right.
Which seems true to the character, but like when as a player, you're like, well, no, don't you want to play this game? Like, you know, find a reason to stay.
Right.
And I had that player get to the point where they're like, okay, I've stolen a gun, I've stolen some money, I've got a car that I can hotwire, I guess I'm out of here. And she looked at me and she said, is there gas? And I went, well, no, of course not. There's a whiff. There's just a whiff of gas, just enough to get you to the gas station, which happens to be where all the other players are, right over at the gas station.
Great.
And then I realized, oh, my gosh, I hadn't even thought of that. But now I'm suddenly like, oh, of course gas is a resource. And I should, if I just put my thumb on the on the scales on that one, I can really, like, prevent. Because a lot of people ask that, like, how do you keep this character in the game? And I'm like, actually, it turns out usually not that hard. I have a few temptations. Hey, the policeman has some of your stuff in his trunk. He would really like it back. But then I realized, oh, the gas.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. And now I'm like, I'm going to use that over and over again, I think.
Great.
So I don't know. How often does it just come at the moment like that versus how often
I find that my best stuff, surprisingly, I mean, for me, my best stuff comes up in play instantaneously.
Interesting.
And I feel like I could, like a lot of times I could stay at home meditating on it for a month.
Yeah.
And then stuff starts happening in like in a nanosecond. And it doesn't even feel like it's one of these things like authors say, it doesn't feel like I made it up.
Yeah.
It feels like it was like unavoidably like in the world at that point.
I think that's the reason, usually at the beginning of convention season, right, when I know like I'm going to go to TotalCon, I'm going to go to HelgaCon, and eventually go to Carnage.
Right.
And I usually think, well, I'll prepare this game and I can bring it to all three.
Yeah.
And it makes my life easier. And then I'll usually go run it with some friends locally first as a practice run. And I find that practice run is key. Like, it really helps me figure out where are the pain points, where am I going to tweak stuff, but also gives me a chance to invent those things that I can then reuse.
Yeah. It's kind of, that one's kind of like sorcery. Like, it does happen the same with my teaching.
Right.
It's like something happens, and it's not even based on anybody else's input, but I just start chatting, and I'm in a different energy state, and then just stuff comes up that I never would have thought of, like, on my own. And yet I did, just it's in a different energy
That's
state.
That's very cool.
Listen to me. Listen to that. Listen to that crap that I just said. That doesn't sound like me.
That's awesome.
So, as a player, what was a highlight?
Let me think about that. Let's see. What did I play in? I played. As a player, what jumped out to me is Rahotep. Can I count that? Was I a player in that game? I think I
was. Yes, you were.
Jeez, I've been so concentrating on all the things I run, I'm now having trouble.
Okay.
It's just been such an overwhelming barrage of weekend events.
Great.
What the hell else did I even play? another thing I just want to mention that stands out to me this weekend is... I know I saw Max using the Insanity cards a bunch, and came in after they were done, like they had wrapped up their game, and they were just sitting around chewing the fat about that game. I think you were in that game.
I was about to talk about that, yeah.
Awesome. And I was just really excited to hear them talk about using the cards. Like, I feel like I don't get a ton of feedback from players about how they use the cards.
Right.
And I was just so delighted to hear some of the stories of things they did with them.
Right. It's really masterful. And again, Paul has a set of rules for Insanity. It's on gamecrafters.com, Insanity Cards by Paul Siegel. Yeah. Again, everybody that runs into it winds up getting a copy and using it for their Insanity rules.
It's really great. I've used it today with Warhammer Fantasy RPG. I've used it with D&D. I've used it with on top of Savage Worlds for my standard, what my brother Max likes to call Paul Thulu.
That's a good title. That's actually
so,
really good.
So what stands out to you from that game?
Boy, that was great. So what Max was doing is that, and we attempted to get in the game together. So he's running a modern Hari thing called like, subscribe, and
like, comment.
Like, comment, subscribe.
Yep.
About it started with one or two online vloggers who talk about games online and have found it difficult, moved the country, and then had a couple of last posts that were weird and bizarre and then went missing. And their acquaintance bloggers and vloggers have gone into upstate New York to try to find them. And so there's a bunch of characters that are, drop testers that drop devices to see if they survive. And there's an influencer, makeup artist, influencer character type thing.
Okay.
And a character who, reveals new devices from totally dependable Russian agencies and stuff like that. And one of the characters was a old school gaming blogger named Stan Rollins, who...
I believe he had a channel, right? It was called something like Pondering DMs.
One of the Pondering DMs. And had a whole lot of information about completely out-of-date editions of role-playing games and stuff like that. And so it was handed... Right, so it was handed to me, like, I guess you get fired at first refusal. And I'm like, I'm not going to play Stan Rollins because if I don't do a good job, I'm never going to live it down. So I handed it aside, and then I took a woman tech specialist. And like halfway through the game, I was like, you really help with this? Stan Rollins, do I have Stan's phone number? So I called, I go, Stan, I need help with this. And then Max had to play me, right? And so Max was like doing his impression of me actually. And he'd go, and then I do this. And then he'd turn to me like, I am so sorry. I'm really sorry about this. And hold on, do this. Great, great, wonderful. Got it. Nice. Good. Good job. Like, I am really. I hope you're not offended by this. This is great. And so we went back and forth with that a couple times. And I sort of insinuated that I was trying to date him because he seemed like a really cool, attractive, well-spoken guy. And so the other players, I was saying that, and in the debrief, one of the other players said, "That's it. On that note, I'm going to bed because that is enough."
Oh, that's
so thank
brilliant.
You, thank you, Max. And the other player, you know, and you know what? I'm probably about the lousiest player in a horror game, actually. So I tried to uphold my end, and the other people are just amazing players. And so I think I'm broken. And now I want once a year to sit in on one of the Paul Fu type games because everybody. Because there's a cadre of players that play those games and don't play my old school D&D games, and I wouldn't be able to sit in a room with them otherwise, and I wouldn't be able to see what they do, which is really different, and great character acting, great voices, completely committed acting around the table, really wonderful like transitions from actual them to voice to insanity, whereby boy it is hard to tell when they're transitioning the weird stuff.
Yeah.
And I've had that 2 years in a row now of like, they're starting to make like misstatements and get names wrong and stuff like that. And I'm like, I cannot tell whether that's an honest accident or if that was an intentional insanity plan. They're so good at this seamless transition. It is hard to tell where it begins and ends.
And you know, that's part of the aspect of those cards is they're built like that to have this escalation factor to them.
Yeah.
So when you have a level one insanity, you're maybe just making a little slip of the wrong word or you know, a little like, oh, did I just see someone behind me kind of motions. And I say by the level five of any given insanity, you're basically an unusable character. Your character is done.
Yeah.
Done. But I don't want to denigrate their abilities in that acting. I'm sure that they take those little nuggets of ideas and fly with them.
Exactly.
Absolutely fly with
them. It's a wonderful kernel for them to play off. And, you know, I think we saw our friend Adam use them in a way. So usually, like me, I'm trying to win. So I'm spreading them out and avoiding insanity as much as possible, which everybody else thinks is weird.
Mm-hmm.
And then most other people stack them all up to a particular channel. And then Adam took two channels and was like ping-ponging back.
That's interesting.
Between which one had priority. So he was going back and forth between two increasingly different
That's usually part of my
channels.
My opening spiel whenever I use the insanity cards is, hey, there's a strategy to these things. You can spread them out and try to remain sane, or you can dive deep because you want to roleplay the insanity. Yeah. I've never seen anybody do the two channel thing.
Right.
That's super cool.
Right. So that was nice, and it was unsettling for him to go between these two different tones.
Yeah.
And oh my God, wasn't he acting it well? He's really, and I'm so glad I get to see that because I would not get to see that if I didn't sit in that game. It was really quite amazing.
So my only regret with that is I super wanted to be in that game. Unfortunately, again, I was running another game while it happened. Because my idea was that if the both of us had gone into that game, then we would have just live streamed it.
Yes.
Because that's just delicious irony right there. I don't know. Maybe that's a thing. Maybe someday we should try to stream a game.
We should do that. Now, if you've been in the game, I believe that Max wouldn't have used the character. So he had two characters.
Oh, yeah. He had a fall character, too.
He did. But he didn't have it at the table.
Oh.
He only brought the one. He apparently rolled out the one for the person that was there.
Oh, because he knew who was going to play.
Yeah.
He knew his players.
Exactly,
that's funny.
Yeah.
I wonder what he would have done if we had both gotten in.
Yeah, I don't know if he'd... I don't know.
I know. Now I'm wondering if we could have gotten into a situation where you played me and I played you. That seems dangerous.
It kind of broke me.
Yeah, great. Well, on that note, I think we should wrap things up. Do you have any final thoughts on
what a great event, and everyone is so appreciative for what you do, and our friend Rebecca does to also support the logistics here.
I couldn't do it without her. She's amazing.
Completely indispensable. You, Paul, have curated just a wonderful circle of acquaintances and gamer friends, and I think we are all just fortunate to be part of it and fortunate to get to know people here. I have some of my best friends I only know from this event. I only see them once a year.
Yeah.
Here in Massachusetts, and they're some of my best friends, and it's like it's a really novel thing to have great friends that I see exactly once a year here in April at HelgaCon.
Awesome. Well, let's do it more.
We should. Right. So you have a website? Should we mention the website?
No, it's not.
Okay.
It's not really ready
great.
For public.
Great.
Uh, just distribution yet. Now, how's that for a teaser, everyone? Take that. Yeah. But I will just say that setting up these kinds of weekend events with your friends is not as hard as Dan makes it out to be. I don't think it's that much work. Again, I see it's a selfish act, and I am looking forward to helping others find a way to do that themselves.
It's such a great idea. People should do it. Highlight of our year. It's a really wonderful way to get together with friends that you know.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, everyone. See you next time.
I can't believe you wouldn't let me do that with my phone.